Welcome to fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for joining us for another episode of All the Vegas. Proudly coming to you from the space, the home of Monday's Dark. You know me, I'm Brock. With me as always is Mark Chinook. Today happens to be a Tuesday, which means that Mark may be suffering from a Monday's Dark hangover. Is that a thing?
It is a thing, but I am not drinking in the month of March in preparation for the heavy drinking that will commence on April 2nd.
A Monday's Dark hangover is not a booze hangover. It's a hangover from too much fun and all the feels from all the money that's generated. Oh. No, you're not buying this?
Sure, I like that, actually. There is a lot of alcohol involved, too, in that fundraising. I think that's why we raise so much money, is we get them liquored up.
That's the only way to do it.
Yeah. And I'm a lot funnier that way, too.
Mark, did you know that I have been writing about restaurants and food in Las Vegas for more than 15 years?
Wow. That's why I like going to lunch with you, because you always pick the places to go eat.
That's a whole long time.
It's a very long time.
Are you surprised that I'm not larger?
No. No, you might have a spit bucket. Maybe you have a technique that I don't know about, like wine, you know, wine tasting. You don't swallow, maybe. You just chew and swish it around a little and toss it.
Well, one of my very favorite food people is here as our guest today.
Very
in all
excited.
My years of doing this restaurant thing in Vegas. If you have worked in the food and beverage industry in Las Vegas on the strip or off, or if you consider yourself a Vegas foodie type who always tries all the hot new restaurants and bars before all of your friends, you definitely know our guest today. She has been instrumental in helping to develop the food culture in this city, from curating memorable events like the First Life is Beautiful Festival to the, I would say, legendary back of house brawl events, to cooking up the best green chili cheeseburger you've ever had in your life from a food truck. Oh, I miss that thing so
much.
Be
your agent.
I know.
Now she's taking on an even bigger task now, and we're super happy to have her here to talk all about everything. Jolene Menina, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Brock. Happy to be here.
Let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
When did you come to Las Vegas? And where did you come from?
I moved to Las Vegas in 1999 from New Orleans. I had the opportunity while I was nice and 22, while working for Commander's Palace, decided they're going to move out here, and I immediately jumped on board. So I've
Commander's
been here for 18
Palace.
Years
Commander's
now.
Palace.
It's like iconic.
It's more
yeah.
than...
Oh, yeah, I was just 22 hanging out at Commander's Palace. Yeah. No big deal. That's awesome.
Were you, you were only 22, so how long were you working in the industry before you moved here? Just started?
A year and a half-ish, right around there. I mean, you know, I did a little bit through college at LSU, but once I started working at Commander's and it was serious, it was $4 in a row, you were in wine club, you know, it's like chefs are yelling at you already.
That's awesome.
It was pretty awesome, yeah.
What was that like working? I mean, obviously the original in New Orleans is like one of the most famous restaurants in the history of this country. So what was that like? Were you like too young to really
understand? No, I was in it. It was great. It was literally, when I say four doubles in a row, you worked in the same room with the same team every 4 days. You had a break in between, and that was it. I mean, they taught you everything. It ran like so seamlessly. You knew everyone who was walking through the door. You knew their first name, their last name. You knew the people they were coming with. You knew, you know, what they drank, what they ate, and it was fine dining. So in each room had its own personality, so you got to see kind of all the different sides of a restaurant. It was great.
What was the Vegas version like? Because I think, unless I have my dates wrong, I believe it opened at the Aladdin, the redone Aladdin in 2000.
That's correct.
And was open for 6 or 7 years.
Right. Yeah, I opened it up in 2000, and I stayed for about a year. Obviously, it doesn't have the same ambiance as a old house in New Orleans across from one of the oldest cemeteries and all these different fun rooms, but it was a gorgeous room. And I met, you know, we opened it up with Carlos Guia, who is still a chef in Vegas. So, you know, I got to be intertwined into some, you know, into the culinary community really fast. So that was great for me. And where I felt that the food was still just as excellent as New Orleans, the reason why I feel like it didn't last so long was mostly because of the location, you know. So it was great. Just, you know, it did lack some of that New Orleans
funk.
Yeah.
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 Hard to recreate that.
It's hard.
I don't think you can recreate that.
Yeah.
And you see it in all genres, restaurants, clubs, theater, you name it. They always try to recreate that original vibe, and you just can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't.
Joe, you still spend a lot of time back home, right?
I definitely try to. I mean, yeah. I used to go back, and when I first moved here, like every 3 months, and now it's like every year. You know, but it grounds me as a person. It's always great to go home, you know.
Yeah, go home.
Plus, it's just – and it's an amazing city. There's, like, no other city like it, I feel like, in the U.S. So it's you know, I try to bring people back so they can experience that with me. Down, home, dirty, good, fun, you know. Yeah.
Do you think that – I mean, obviously, it's one of the greatest food cities in the world, too. Is that – do you think being from there – influenced your career choices?
Well, I think hospitality in general, you know, growing up there, everyone's so hospitable and, you know, really enjoy taking care of each other. So that scene and that service is, you know, these are professions for people. They're not just, you know, a waiter for a few months because they're getting through, you know, college or this or that. They're, you know, they're families and this is their job and they take it extremely seriously. So, you know, all those pieces, you know, my grandmother loved to cook, you know, my other grandma loved to cook. They're always throwing parties. It just was kind of like within my blood growing up, you know.
That's not the only huge Vegas restaurant that you have spent time at. Obviously, you were at 9 Steakhouse at the Palms for a number of years.
Yeah,
right?
I opened up 9 2001 for, was there for 10 years. That was fun.
Yeah, it's an. That was, did it just close?
It closed and it's reopening because they're redoing all the palms.
Yeah, with the redo.
Yeah, it'll be a new name, but same chef. Chef Barry the Cake is still there.
That was the jam.
And you were there really in its peak.
I mean, we went strong for a solid 7 years. Like,
well, when
you
the palms opened.
Actually, almost the total 10 years I was there. Yeah.
Like, when the palms opened, it could do no wrong. Like, that whole property was the place to come. You know, it was the first time we were introduced to, like, off-strip partying. You know, you could hang out.
It was the first day club.
Day club.
It was the first pool party.
I mean, what a pool, too.
Yeah. It was fun. And then I was 23, so I was having a blast.
How did you survive?
You know, it's not a hard jump from New Orleans to Vegas. It's not.
It might even be a step back regard, right? Because I've partied in New Orleans. It
is
a freaky
way
party.
Way more trouble in New Orleans than here. It's like, you know, it's not pretentious at all. Like, you're just in there, give me a whiskey, shut the fuck up, let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I curse on this?
Yeah. How, yes.
Okay.
Too late now. No, yes.
Oh, shit.
How often are things just like going insane in that restaurant at that time?
Yeah, I know. It was, come on. I mean, it was one of the first steakhouses that the music was so loud that you literally had to yell at your guest. And if you're going to yell at your guest, then you might as well drink with your guest. So it was just like, it was a party for the service. We knew everyone in there. It was like Cheers. You knew everybody at the bar. You knew all your regulars coming in. And then we had an amazing staff. So, you know, we all worked really well with each other. And at that time, they allowed us to drink. So it was good, you know.
And celebrities always in and out of that place.
Yeah, everybody went there. Everybody signed Barry's door. At the time, they were playing, you know, they were doing concerts in rain and then coming over. We cleared out 9 Steakhouse once for a party for Gwen Stefani. And I was just like, yeah, I love Vegas. You know, we did that for Kiss, too. That was pretty fun. But, Kiss. It was wild.
Who was, like, the nicest celebrity that you...
Oh, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, Rosie O'Donnell was pretty nice back in the day. There's a lot of really nice... Yeah. I didn't have really any issues with anyone. Yeah.
How about this? What was the most expensive check you can remember?
Maybe one of the most expensive might have moved over to STK.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even remember. I just remember getting lots of thousands of dollars from a tip. Yeah.
I mean, that's it.
Everybody wants to show off, mm-hmm. right? It's like, you don't normally eat kilos of caviar, but you do when you're in Vegas.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, but I get it. You know, these guys are also losing millions of dollars at the same time. So, yeah.
One of the things I like to do is go, this is a crazy dumb thing to do, but like go to one of those big strip steakhouses during CES and just intense. Like watch.
It's intense. I mean, these guys pump it out. This is where that passion comes in because that is not an easy night.
No.
Yeah, 800 covers, 1,000 covers.
It's all corporate dollars,
that's
too.
That's
it. So the guys that are in town rolling on these big tables, they don't care.
It's a
company write-off for the week. And
yep.
I've been in restaurants when that's been going down because I've been invited to be a guest. Hey, join us for dinner. And you walk in and the restaurant is just insane. It's loud. There are bodies everywhere. The staff is running around. Things are breaking. There's food flying everywhere. It's a scene, man. And that CES week is nuts. Nuts.
Mark, you can probably speak to this because you are an actor and have been an actor for a long time, which means you've probably been a waiter quite a bit in your life.
I was in the restaurant service industry for probably 15 years on and off. When I first moved to New York City, my first job was a door guy at a nightclub. I was the door guy at Polyester's, 70s-80s disco. And then I changed the marquee at the B.B. King Blues Club. And then I worked for the Patina Group for a long time as a bartender and a waiter. But anyway, go ahead, ask your question.
I was just going to say that when I go to other cities, which is probably not as often as it should be, I go to restaurants and they're great, but I notice that the level of service on the Strip especially, I think it, you know, there's a great reputation for service there, and I think it's well-deserved, and I see a little bit of a drop-off sometimes when I go to other places, and I wonder if you guys see that as well.
I would agree with you.
I definitely agree.
Yeah, I think, and it's what you were mentioning before, these are careers mm-hmm. here in Vegas and in cities like New Orleans, mm-hmm. whereas when you go to New York and Los Angeles, because it's such an actor-heavy city, that most of your service industry in Los Angeles is somebody looking to drop their headshot as opposed to drop the check, which is fine. And that's not to say, I'm not going to say that they're all bad, but their eye is on a different prize. I was a great waiter. I'm not going to lie. I was a fantastic waiter. I did my job. I learned my specials. I was off book. And I also enjoyed wine. And I'm also a good communicator. And I think that's why I was maybe successful in transitioning and actually getting gigs more frequently, is because I actually could learn my shit. But I would love to converse when the time was appropriate with my clients. And I worked for a restaurant underneath the Music Center in Los Angeles called Kendall's. It was a French brasserie owned by the Patina Group. And we were slammed from 4 p.m. until 10 to 8 because we would get 250, 300 covers in that time because they were all going upstairs to see either the opera, a play at the Mark Taper Forum, or a play at the Amundsen Theater. And then from 8 to 10:30, crickets.
Done.
And so we would come in at 3 o'clock, do our side work, get ready to go. I had regulars who were season ticket subscribers to all the theaters, and they would request my section. They're like, can you put us in Mark's section tonight? We're coming to see Romeo and Juliet or whatever. Now, I got that gig when I moved to L.A. because I moved to L.A. to do a play at the Mark Taper Forum. And I did a play for 8 weeks at the Taper. And after it closed, I was like, do I go back to New York? Do I stay in L.A.? What do I do? And after the show, every night we would be at the bar and we'd have a great beer because they'd have all these great, you know, Le Fin du Monde or something really cool on tap. We'd have these awesome beers. And I said, you know what? I'm going to stay in L.A. I'm going to give this a run. Can I get a job here? And they looked at me like I was nuts. They're like, weren't you the guy in the play upstairs? And I'm like, yeah, now I need a bartending gig. And I waited tables at Kendall's on 1st and Grand downtown under the Music Center in L.A. for probably 6 years.
Huh.
But they were great because I'd book a gig and they'd let me go do the gig.
Right.
And then I'd come back. And so that's
fun.
Also another thing that, you know, everybody's always looking to pick up shifts or get shifts covered. And it's no different than any other job that I've had. I become family members with cast members. I became family members with my staff at Kendall's, and some of them are my best friends to this day.
And they're career waiters. Like, I have a buddy who's a career bartender and a career waiter for the Patina Group. He gets benefits and...
Oh, no, it's a great job.
It's a great gig.
A lot of times you can sleep all day, and it's just a night service. Okay. Mm-hmm. Switch whenever you want to. Like you said, health benefits. There's a lot of perks for it.
Yeah. And if you are a hustler, it's not your only gig. Mm-hmm. It's what pays your bills, but it allows you, like you just said, you can have the daytime free to write, produce, do whatever you want, and then you're going in from 3 to 10.
Yeah. So. I waited tables while I had my food truck 2 days a week just to cover my bill so I could finish, you know, so I could do what I wanted to do and build that, you know.
Why I work at Magic Mike Live. I literally perform in Magic Mike Live to pay the staff at the space.
Right, yeah.
You do what you got to do.
Joe, you, as you just mentioned, struck out on your own, started a food truck called Sloppy Joe's. This was right when people were starting to do food trucks, kind of the gourmet food truck boom or mini boom in Las Vegas. How scary was that to do your own thing? And how quickly did you realize that you were going to be doing your own thing from here on out?
You know, it wasn't necessarily that it was scary. And I will say mostly because I knew that if it didn't work out, just like we were just talking about waiting tables, I would have jumped right back into the restaurant. You know what I mean? And I would have been totally fine. So that piece wasn't that scary. You know, I told myself I wanted my own business and started to look around. It was 2010. And it was like the economy and everything was not so amazing. And I was like, you know, why, you know, I was looking downtown. Downtown was not ready in 2010 for like another restaurant or anything like that. So I'm like, why not start with a food truck, have, you know, not a crazy overhead, and really figure out if, you know, if this is what I want to do, right? And so then I started really thinking about it, and I was like, well, I don't know. I mean, unless I could pair up with a casino, there's nobody really walking the streets in Vegas. You know, I'm like, how would I get that foot traffic? And then Sliding Through launched, and they were getting these crazy lines, and I was like, it's definitely doable. Mm-hmm. 7 months later, I had a truck. I put together a business plan. I got investors. I like set it all up. And as soon as I launched that truck, even though it's difficult, but you know, it's a checklist away. You got to make it happen. I knew I would be working for myself. You know what I mean? I was like, this is not hard. I can, you know, you can make it happen. You just have to do it. You know, so we launched, I launched Sloppy Joe's in 2010. I kept my job at Nine Steakhouse for the first couple months just because, you know, I needed to make sure I had something coming in. And until I was just too exhausted, I dropped Nine and did the food truck. And I only did it, you know, I only had the truck for just over a year. I had started creating events with it because I noticed a few months in that my whole business plan had to change. I'm like, yes, I need to do catering. I need to do special events. These are the things I need to do to make it happen. And I didn't necessarily want to just sling food. I wanted the people that were coming to enjoy the food, and I wanted that whole piece of it. And I'm very much a front of house person as well. So that's when I started the Back of House Brawl, which I guess we'll get into. But you know, that piece of it, really, you know, that's when I started to realize that I wanted to do more of events, not necessarily have a restaurant, even though I love that piece of it. But I still get to be around all my friends and all these people and still intertwine with the same community. But, I don't know. I saw it. I took it. I did it. And it was super beneficial for me. Yeah.
I love food trucks.
Do you?
Like, I really do. And I don't know. I just love it. I love them. I love the throw the paper out when you're done. And you don't have to wait for a table and go sit on the curb and whatever. I just think there's something really cool about it. And now that we have the space,
we've been approached a ton by food trucks.
Right, because you don't have a kitchen here, right?
We don't have a kitchen here.
Yeah.
And so even with some of the special events that have rented from us, we always suggest, hey, can we bring in... We don't have any preferred... There's no preferred vendor list here.
Right.
So when people say, hey, can I use this? Can I use that? And I'm always like, get a food truck. Make it easy. It's fun.
Yeah.
And we have loading doors. Like one time, a smaller truck just pulled right in the side of the building and they cooked and served it out into the room. And I'm like, this is the way to go. Truck.
Yeah.
Do you still have it?
No, I sold it.
Does somebody still use it?
Well, I didn't sell
You didn't sell the sloppy job.
Yeah, I just sold the truck.
So somebody painted your
old
truck.
And I shipped it to Washington.
Nice.
Eight. Yeah.
What's it called now? Do you know?
I don't know anymore. No, I don't know.
It could be.
I can't remember what they were going to do.
Three or four things.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Now, but with the inside of the truck, that would dictate what that person is cooking, maybe?
I mean, that's how I did it. I found the truck and then decided on the menu. So based off of what was inside of it. So there's a flat, you know, most of them have a flat top, most of them have a fryer, a steam table, right? So those are like your main, yeah. So I just built the menu around that. I knew I wanted to do the Hatch, you know, green chilies. But then, yes, just like you said, I looked to see what it was. I'm like, I don't have extra money to like change, like retrofit this, you know, 85.
These trucks are cheap.
Well, the one I got was relatively inexpensive back in the day. Plus it was, the gas gauge didn't work. I mean, the speedometer didn't work. I knew exactly how to wire it so that I could get the fryer to come on. You know, that's with all, you just learn how to use it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But, you know, it worked. You know, I got down the street. It just couldn't go over 50.
The back of house brawl. I mean, let's talk about what this thing is. When you first started it, it was at Tommy Rocker's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Basically,
I've been. I went.
A few steps away. Basically, you're rounding up chefs from Las Vegas to come by late night after they get off work.
Yeah.
They get inside somebody else's food truck.
Yeah.
They cook competitively.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's friends come out and all these industry people come out. Yeah. And it's a huge party and it's delicious and it's crazy.
Yeah.
I guess that sums it up.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And then that turned into a TV show for a short while.
Yeah, we had 2 seasons on FYI.
And it was called Late Night
Chef Fight.
Late Night Chef Fight.
Yeah.
That's when you became a TV star.
Well, no, Layla Ali and Vic Vegas. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to taste the food.
That must have been kind of crazy, too, though, for something that you... started such a homegrown thing to turn into a TV show.
Yeah, it was wild. It was super cool. Yeah, it was super cool to see it come together and, like, yeah, watch them kind of play it out. Yeah, I mean, it was fun. It was exciting to get that call. I never thought that call was going to happen. These guys had shopped the show for, like, 2 years, and I was like, whatever, go for it if you want to. You know, and then you get that call and you're like, oh.
It's happening.
Okay.
That's so cool.
What does that mean? Yeah.
It was such a fun event, though, because it goes back to what I was saying about the family element, right? Like, we're hanging out in the back of Tommy Rocker's in a parking lot. It could be 100 degrees outside. Nobody gave a shit. We're drinking beer. We're waiting to see what you guys create.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It was so much fun.
Yeah.
And we were doing Rock of Ages at the time.
Yeah.
The entire cast of Rock of Ages would show up. And I don't know if I ever said hi to you. I have no idea. But yeah. I was starstruck when I went there. I was like, this is the greatest thing in Vegas right now. And I'm like, you couldn't park. You'd like leave your car in hopes it would be there when you left. But you didn't care because it was just, it was the place to be if you were a local in Las Vegas who worked in the service industry. And I say this all the time too. And, you know, Brock would ask me about doing a show. You know, we're just a piece of this ginormous Las Vegas puzzle. You know, like the actors on stage are no different from the people who vacuum the hallways or change the sheets in the rooms or the cooks and the waiters. Everybody comes to Vegas to forget about their shit for a little while, and all of these pieces are what makes it go. And it is such a cool thing. It's just a great time. So
yeah, thanks. I'm so glad that you get to experience it, especially back then.
Yeah,
I gotta try to get it back. Have one night at Tommy Rocker's again. It was the best spot, honestly. It was great. Actually, it's not far off the strip. This wouldn't be a bad option. I try to, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. So nobody wants to go to a destination to get there. I mean, Herbs and Rye was almost too far. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you want to keep it as close as you possibly can. That's why DMAR is perfect. I'm like, everybody can funnel through there and get there really quickly. Yep. You know, plus, nobody wants expensive drinks.
No.
You know, it's like, you know, just give me a shot, a beer. Like, these guys love PBR, whatever.
Yep.
You know, and yeah, it works. So, yeah.
And Backhouse Brawl is back since the fall. You've done a few. You just did one on St. Patrick's Day. Yeah. How did that one go, by the way? I don't know who won.
It went great. Justin Hall won from the Kitchen at Atomic. So it was Justin Hall and Josh Clark from The Good Witch. And they're best friends, and they're my best friends.
And you made them battle to the death.
I did.
Best friends.
It was awesome.
Now, do you come up with the task?
Yeah. That's I get to do whatever I want to do.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So I work with a few different people to get some good ingredients. So Cured and Way, which is also Michael's Gourmet Pantry, they supply a lot of the, you know, great cheeses and some poultry and stuff to all the chefs. They're awesome. I get to, like, I've been working with them for the last few months for, like, really cool ingredients that we can get. And so this time, we were thinking I wanted them to have to butcher something. So, and I haven't done butchering before. So they had to butcher.
Is that a permit? Yeah. Do you need a special permit for that?
So, I mean, I don't know who's going to listen to this, but I don't. Yeah. So anyways, you know, we made one of, like, the main ingredient was foie gras, right? And, you know, I'm like, you can't fuck up foie gras, right? Like, it's just good. But we gave them the entire duck, and they had to
find it,
butcher out the liver for the ingredient. It was pretty awesome.
Well, those are the right guys to do it.
Oh, no, I had a whole live stream. In the trucks, everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. And we had two. So Land Rover is one of our sponsors, and they bring out – their truck is called Clifford.
Yeah.
And there's two flat screens on each side, so you could see. They split the screens, do all of it. Super professional.
They're one of our sponsors here.
Are they?
Yeah, Land Rover Jaguar. They're awesome. And I know that.
Yeah,
really
you probably
cool.
know Rick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those guys are the right chefs to do that. That's for sure.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, they had a blast.
And those are restaurants that everybody needs to go check out. The Kitchen at Atomic downtown and Good Witch, which is also downtown, but is getting ready to open a second location.
That's right.
In the Southwest pretty soon.
Yep.
The next Back of House Brawl is April 14th.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's April 14th. It's at the Sand Dollar, which is one of my favorite drinking holes for sure. And it is three chefs. We have Chef Sean Collins from RM Seafood, Rick Giffen from the Top of the World, like oversees all Stratosphere, and Richard Hoffman, who is now with Station Casinos at Red Rock. So we got three of them. Yeah. So they're going to go head-to-head. Basically, we get completely set up at 10 p.m., but then the brawl starts at 1. Okay, and then the bar is always open, right? So the bar, actually, Sand Dollar isn't open until 7. But there'll be food trucks, there'll be a bar outside, bar inside, a little bit of music, and me, you know, cursing at everybody. Yeah,
I'll be there, too. I'll be cursing at everybody,
That's right. You're a judge.
Yeah, you are.
You know, Jim Bigley is also judging.
Well, I think people should still go,
in
despite
Big
that.
Vegas. Yeah.
Just kidding. Jim, if you're listening to this, I'm just kidding.
Uh-huh.
Vic's the third judge?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll shoot him a text.
Nice.
It's an all-star judging
panel. That's a pretty pretty sexy judging panel.
Thanks,
yeah, it's super sexy.
That's great.
So the day after, so you know we do this, and I get done around 5:30, 6 in the morning, okay, and then the next day we're doing a championship battle at the Vegas Food Expo, so that's happening, and it's Sunday and Monday.
Timing.
Yeah, great timing.
Great timing.
I have Big Vegas hosting this.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's going to be joyful. What time does he get out as a judge?
Well, he'll be done around 2:30.
Okay, so that's not bad for him.
So it's up to him if he wants to stay or leave.
Yeah.
You know.
You're in trouble.
Right. I'm totally okay with it. I can rally pretty hard, and I can make people rally, so.
Good.
I had way too much to drink last time I judged one of these things.
Most people do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what happens, people.
It's outrageously sloppy, but...
so much fun.
Yeah, it's okay.
So these days, Jolene, you are part of the team at Urban Seed, which is a pretty exciting urban farming project that started up recently in Las Vegas. Can you tell us a little bit about that for those people who don't know, and also what was it that... attracted you to work on that project?
So I I was basically brought into this project to Urban Seed about 3 years ago. And friends of mine who were doing the branding and marketing for Urban Seed realized what kind of project this was and how amazing it was and how much it was needed for Vegas. And they're Vegas locals. And so immediately when they found out that, you know, they're definitely going to launch in Vegas and we're definitely going after, you know, the culinary community, the restaurants, you know, not grocery stores, not this, but really the restaurants, they brought me in and they're like, you know, you got to meet Jolene's. Awesome, right? We are smart farming. We are revolutionizing the way you can grow and distribute locally. Okay, so we've got our own proprietary growing system that is super efficient and sustainable. And it's all done and manufactured in-house. So we grow on A-frames and we grow aeroponically. So it's an aeroponic system. So like hydroponics, the root is submerged in water and this is actually a fogging system. So the root gets exactly what it needs and then it's a closed loop system. So the water is completely recycled through and reused. So the only water that you're losing is exactly what is absorbed by the plant. Right. So we have 3 acres on Wynn Road between Trop and Harmon. And it took us a while to get our building permits because there's nothing in Clark County that's set up for a greenhouse. So we then bought another 3 acres in Pahrump so that we could kickstart and start testing all of our technology, testing all of our varietals. And we've been in production. I've been harvesting for about 7 months and for the last 16 weeks have been selling to, you know, to the chefs. And we should have our Wynn Road property, the first few greenhouses, up and running fall of this year. So we produce a ton in a very small square foot space. I mean, it's pretty outrageous. Awesome. And it's all, you know, we use all organic practices, non-GMO, all natural. And, you know, we can't be listed as organic because we're actually not growing in soil. So we use the outer core of the coconut shell, you know, to grow all of our plants. So yeah, it's pretty amazing.
So cool.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So I mean, 99% of our produce comes from out of town, whether people realize that or not, you know, and being a food mecca, it's obviously something that's needed. So we're able to give the chefs something that is...
Does anything come from this region in restaurants?
We say 1% to be nice, but there's a lot. There's some small farms around the areas, you know, but nothing that is consistent, you know, and nothing that can make a dent in this market. We're extremely scalable. I mean, we're set up to be very modular and to grow really, really quickly.
That's got to be exciting for chefs, too.
Yeah, they love it. Yeah, like, yeah, they're all over it.
I know, if I was chopping, I'd be like, give me that. It just came from the corner.
Yeah,
over
I mean,
there.
We bring them out to we bring them out to harvest with us. I mean, so you know, cool. We do as much as we possibly can to be intertwined in the community as well as culinary marketing for the chefs, so they can be a voice in sustainability and you know why it's important to grow local and keep things local. It's just this all intertwines with everything I've done. So when they asked me to do this, I was amazing. You know, now I get to provide all of my friends, you know, something beautiful that they can give their guests, something that's a better product for them, more nutritious, like, you know, so it was a huge win for me, so.
What are some of the restaurants, because I know there's a handful now that we can go out and get this food from?
Yeah, a lot of, so we actually started a campaign called We Love Local Food, and you'll see it grow, obviously, as we launch our larger property, but we're, you know, they're putting an Urban Seed salad on the menu. So, you know, you can get an Urban Seed salad right now at Atomic Kitchen. You can get one at Public Us. You can get one at Sparrow and Wolf. You can get one at Top of the World. You can get one at Border Grill. I mean, we're supplying a ton of produce to MGM Properties, Harvest, Bordeaux, Herringbone, Sage, you know, Libertine Social. I mean, you know, we are delivering right now just under 20 restaurants a week, and we only harvest once a week. And we're harvesting about 2/3 of one of our A-frames. And when we come to Wynn Road, we will we'll have 24 A-frames. That would be, and like, it's gonna go really, really fast. Correct. And yeah, we're very aggressive right now with our growth, and we're planning to have 100 greenhouses, you know, in 5 years in Vegas, and that will be still, honestly, a small dent in the amount of, you know, produce that's coming to Vegas.
DW Bistro?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's another one, yeah. I've seen it there.
Yeah, absolutely. You can get it there. And Bryce is actually on my culinary board.
Yep.
Love Bryce.
Yeah, Bryce is great.
Mm-hmm.
So. We use DW for catering here a lot.
Yeah.
We use their restaurant for lunches and things. And
perfect.
He's a huge supporter of...
I mean, it makes sense. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's a huge supporter of everything Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Or as I say, all the Vegas.
All the Vegas.
Incredible. All right. It's time. It's time for the Vegas you need. This is where we're going to go around the table and make recommendations. I feel like we've already kind of made some recommendations today just during our normal discussion.
Just the restaurant list that you just spouted off where you have your Urban Seed products. I'm like, hi.
Yeah, it's no coincidence that the places you can get Urban Seed products are some of the best restaurants in town. So, Jolene, I'm going to ask you to go first.
Okay.
With your pick.
So, so many places, but I'm going to stick with one that I mentioned earlier, which is the Sand Dollar. I used to go to the Sand Dollar back in the day when I used to work at the Palms, which was a completely different establishment. But when Jameson and Benito, took over that space, they kept that same vibe. And it's one of the best places in Vegas where you can go any night and see live music. And that's something that's dear to me, especially coming from New Orleans. Like, I want a place where I can just go sit down and get, some jazz, some blues or something. So they feed into that very well. And in addition to that, you're walking into a dive bar, but you can get a solid cocktail if you want to, or you can just get a Jameson on the Rocks. It doesn't matter. They're soon going to be adding some food. So they're going to be having some pizza. So Jameson is one of the owners, and Benito is also the wine guy for Michael Mina. Okay, so you have an understanding here. And they're all friends with all the chefs. So it's a solid hangout. It's for culinary, for locals, for anybody. So that's my pick.
Sand Dollar. They have a mezcal old fashioned there that
I'm into that.
Just cannot resist. One is all you need. Mark, the Vegas you need. What are you thinking?
I'm going to push the new Spiegel World show, Opium, at the Cosmopolitan. I'm a fan of all things Spiegel World. I've never worked for Spiegel World, but their shows are fantastic. And since I'm going to push a show and not a restaurant, I'm going to go with the new Opium, which just opened at Rose Rabbit Lie in Cosmo. It's a beautiful venue. I'm thrilled that something is finally back in there. And because we're talking food, there is no lack of restaurants at the Cosmo. So what a night out. Get to the Cosmo, pick a restaurant, pick any restaurant in the Cosmo because they're all fantastic, and check out the new Spiegel World show, Opium, at Rose Rabbit Lie.
That's a good pick. Spiegel World used to do a show there called Vegas Nocturne, which was very – I never saw that one actually, but very highly reviewed. And just didn't work out. It's on tour now, I think, or it's in New York, and it's doing really well.
Again, it's what we were talking about before. It's very hard to recreate something original and put it in a different spot. And I think the room Rose Rabbit Lie is almost the show.
It's
like,
great.
Yeah, when you go in there, you're kind of like, why isn't this thing being used all the time? And as an entertainer, if I could do a show anywhere, just get up on stage and tell some jokes and sing some songs, that room is so sexy and unique. So I'm just thrilled that there's something in that space because that space is the jam. Or marmalade, or I don't know.
Marmalade.
Is that even a thing anymore?
Yeah, sure. Know. Whatever.
Well, I'm thinking of New Orleans.
He's Canadian. Maybe that's what they call it.
Poutine.
Since we're talking about late night drinking and eating, I am going to go with my new go-to for on the way home, late night snack and drink, and that's Herbs and Rye, the cocktail bar on West Sahara that everybody already knows and loves, but I just recently discovered the meatballs there, which are so good, and there's chorizo in there, so it's like this really bright, delicious tomato sauce, and then like spiciness just punches you in the face. Particularly good if you need to sober up a little bit, wake up a little bit, to move on to the next party or head home and do whatever.
Monday's Dark staple for our guests. After they leave Monday's Dark at 11 p.m. or later, I would say a good chunk of entertainers venture to the Herbs and Rye.
And they have a killer happy hour that starts like midnight.
Yeah, you can get a
half off
steak for half price after midnight. Yeah, not necessarily want to down a ribeye, but I've done it. I've done it.
You don't really. I mean, you do lots of things you don't want to do at Herbs and Rye. It just things just happen in there.
Hey-o.
Is that just me? Sorry.
Maybe. No, it's everybody.
Jolene, thanks again for spending some time with us today. We really appreciate it. Great to check in with you.
I'm hungry.
Me too.
Yeah.
That's what I was hoping would happen.
Oh, okay.
It's not open yet.
It's not really
too early. That next back of house brawl, once again, it's open to everybody. We'll see you there. It's April 14th at the Sand Dollar. Three chefs fighting. Try to get there by midnight and start drinking profusely, and it will be a wonderful time. Mark, what is coming up in your world and here at the space?
We've got Sam Cook's daughter, Carla Cook, which I'm actually really excited about. We've been spoiled in the sense, the last little bit, to have AJ Lambert, obviously Frank Sinatra's granddaughter, performing here on the regular basis, and now to have Sam Cook's daughter, Carla, come in and sing for us at the end of the month is thrilling. That's on the 29th. And then Big Monday's Dark for the Tyler Robinson Foundation. That's obviously the Imagine Dragons charity of choice on April 2nd. We're going to give those guys $10,000, and that happens to be someone's birthday that's affiliated with the organization, so you have to come and find out who. So that's those are two events coming up for us. But go see and go eat at this back of house brawl. I've been to the events, and they are the jam. They are the marmalade.
They are the marmalade. Please visit allthevegas.com because in addition to this podcast, you can find all sorts of fun little features about food and booze and shows and everything awesome that's going down in Las Vegas. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and YouTube at allthevegas. Thank you so much for listening. Drive carefully. Come back soon.